Recorded live right here in Little Rock, Arkansas, it's Larry's Rants, Raves, and Reviews. And now here's Larry.
Yeah. This is a wild crowd tonight. And we do have live people in our studio tonight.
We sure do.
Our audience, so, you know, I didn't hear much out of them, but maybe we can get them pepped up here in a little while. Yeah. Huh? What do you think?
Maybe.
Well, Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas.
You know, this is airing on Christmas Day, and we thought that it would be really a good podcast, a good show to air out here on Christmas Day. The family's together, and I think that parents, grandparents, you could get your kids around and listen to this and probably learn something and appreciate what we've got.
I think so.
We have got an outstanding guest, our first female guest on the show, Mrs. Martha Cothran. Now, I'm going to refer to her as Coach Cothran.
Coach Cothran.
Because yes. Kyle had her in out at Joe T.
Right.
She's the history teacher, or was the history teacher.
Uh-huh.
And there was something that happened back in, can you believe it, 2005? Quite some time ago.
Seems like centuries ago.
Well, I will tell you, we have a celebrity in our midst here, Randy, because I went to Google her and everything. I've known about the story for a long time, and so have
right.
you.
Uh-huh.
We live here in Arkansas, and Mike Huckabee, when he was running for president, he actually used this story in several of his speeches and everything. And so we have when we started our podcast, I thought, man, that would be a great story to bring back.
Sure.
Because people need to rehear this story. And so I'm going to just kind of throw this to her and let her tell her story, and let's get in it. And then we might have some questions as we go along. But, you know, when you and I were talking on the phone, you alluded to the idea of why this episode in school actually started.
That's right.
So if I can just lead you to that point, you jump in and tell us anything you want to tell us.
Thank you. I had, in fact, it's Arkansas state law that the Pledge of Allegiance be said every day in every public school in Arkansas. However, there are always those who drag somewhat behind, and some of our teachers came to me in May of 2005 and said, you know, we've got some kids that will not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Can you give us any ideas on how to encourage them? And I said, well, this is the end of the school year. Let me think about it, and then I'll come up with a plan. So as the summer went through, I talked with some of our VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars members, and told them that I had an idea that I'd like them to take part in. And they said, tell us what you want and when you want us there. So I decided that it was a lesson that our students needed to learn. As we got ready for the opening of school and back then it was August 2005, not like September when we were young and growing up.
Right.
Now we start in the middle of August. But I talked to our custodian. I did go to my principal and tell her what I wanted to do. And she said, well, okay, you know. So our custodian took all the chairs, the desks, out of my classroom and stored them hidden in the auditorium.
Oh.
And the first day of school, the bell rang and the first kids walked in, and my teacher desk was sitting there, and I have a podium that I talk from, and they said, where's our desk? And I said, well, you are guaranteed a free public education. You are not guaranteed a chair. Have a seat on the floor.
My goodness.
And I had brought some towels and some sheets so they wouldn't get their little bottoms dirty as they sat down. And they started saying, well, how do we get our desk back? I said, you've got to figure it out. You know, that's up to you. So as the class went through, and this was the first day, and we were on a block schedule then, but it was just those were a four period a day schedule, but we met all seven periods that first day. So I knew I was going to get to see every student that we had for the year. So as the kids filed in and sat down, they started asking, well, you know, how do we earn them? Good grades. No, that's not going to be what it is. Somebody said, we got to behave. And I said, well, you are going to behave, but that's not like how me. You earn your desk.
That was me.
So various things. And, of course, they sat on the floor and they whined and complained, but they really took it well. And I was a little disappointed because I wanted them to be raving mad. I wanted all the parents to come storming up to school to say, because all the kids by this time had cell phones, oh, wow. And I wanted them to let their parents know so that I could help the parents understand also.
Now, in 2005, that didn't happen, but today, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, today it would have happened.
Yeah.
But as the classes went, we had four periods before lunch and then four periods after lunch, and by the last period of the day, kids were in the hallway going, this is crazy. And, of course, the word up and down the hall has been, Coach Cothran has lost her mind, but we can't figure out how to fix it. No parents showed up. I was disappointed, but I knew that it was going to make a difference. So the last period of the day, there were about 30 seconds left in the class period, and I stopped everybody and said, okay, all day long, you have asked, how do we earn our chairs? And I just stopped where I was, and I looked to the door, and the door swung open, and in walked a group of veterans, each one carrying a chair.
Oh, my.
And with tears pouring down my cheeks, I told the kids, you don't have to earn your desk. They did it for you.
Mm.
Mm. And that touches me today, just like it did that day. I can't ever tell that story without crying. And I looked up, and the veterans carried the desk, and they went and lined up against the wall, and they had tears pouring down their cheeks. And the kids just sat there, and the bell rang. And I'm so proud to tell you that every kid in that room went and hugged every veteran who was there.
Wow.
And then the kids from outside the door opened and they started pouring in. And the cameraman for Channel 16, and I wish I'd written his name down, and I never did, and I don't even have a clue. He said, Coach, can I talk to you? And I said, sure, and walked over. And he said, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I've never been welcomed home till today.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And, of course, he cried and I cried. And it was just, it was unbelievable, the feeling that just rushed through us. And the fact that the teachers came in, the students came in, and they hugged the veterans. And we stayed there probably 40 minutes after school just talking to the veterans and the kids. And it was the most moving thing I think I've ever taken part in.
Mm. Oh, it'd have to be, yeah.
But from that moment on, when our kids came back to school the next day, the word was out. You don't sit down during the pledge.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, and it went through all the classes, and the teachers came to me and said, wow, we asked you for help. We didn't know it was going to be this. And I said, well, I didn't know it was going to be this emotional either. But it made a major difference. And throughout the school year, you could really feel the difference in our school kids at our sporting events. You could almost see the pride in the kids when we played the national anthem. And our kids didn't sit down anymore. I didn't have a single teacher come to me. They had all said, this is unreal.
Lesson learned.
And we had such
a
fantastic year that year.
Wow.
And
well, that's real leadership. I mean, you know, you could teach them all you wanted about the Pledge of Allegiance, but you led them into a place of why, how important it really is.
And, you know, as we're speaking on Christmas here, one of the greatest gifts God ever gave us was the freedom that we have in this country. And the fact that he allowed me to be a small part in spreading that has been one of the greatest blessings I could ever ask for.
That's awesome. Mm. That's awesome.
Because our freedoms here belong to the men and women.
I really don't know that as Americans we recognize how blessed we really are.
We don't.
I'm afraid that we have forgotten that. And, you know, Randy and I, back in the summer when the Ronald Reagan, the movie Reagan came out, he and I and Carol and Donna, we went and watched it. And I got to be honest with you, there were moments in that movie that I had tears in my eyes. I didn't cry, but I had them swelling up pretty good. And I walked out of there and recognized Ronald Reagan. Our country was in such bad shape then, and he came on the scene at that time, and he brought a really big dose of patriotism.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
And you know, back some shows ago, Randy and I did a show that was from that movie, if you will. We kind of reviewed it a little bit, and we talked about America needs a good dose of patriotism.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, and I'll just be real honest with you. This touches my heart because you're looking at what used to be the number one Kansas City Chief fan, okay?
And I still like him a lot.
Well, okay, that's great. I'm not beating this to death, but I'll just allude to it one more time, and I think you might be able to appreciate it. A few years ago when they started kneeling during our Pledge of Allegiance, when they did that, I'm no longer a fan. I quit watching NFL. I divorced the NFL.
So did I.
And I just, I walked away, and I've probably got $10,000 or $15,000 worth of memorabilia in storage, wanting to give it away.
But I'm very impressed now. Their coach is really standing up against that.
Yeah.
So they have reinforced my belief that they're, you can make a mistake.
There you go.
You can make a mistake, and then you can correct that mistake.
There you go, Larry.
And some of my friends have said that to me. And my statement back to them is, had they quit doing it, or are they no longer airing the national anthem on TV?
Sometimes they do.
I haven't watched a pro football game from the start in years because a lot of times we just don't get the TV turned on in time or something.
Yeah.
But I also have noticed that there are a lot of college athletes who have knelt when the national anthem was played at various sporting events. And I have not got solid research. I know that Facebook, which is can be anybody's guess, there are many, many people who claim that their scholarships have been pulled because of the fact they knelt during the national anthem. I hope that's true.
Well, and I'll kind of get off of that mark with just simply saying God's full of grace. Larry's not quite so full. So I divorced the NFL, and so that's just me. And all of this started, getting back to your story, it all started because the children were not standing and doing the Pledge of Allegiance.
Exactly.
I had no idea, Randy, that it was Arkansas law that
I didn't either.
In the class you had to do the national anthem.
I had it posted in my classroom for a while. I don't know what I did with the sheet. When I retired, everything got packed in boxes.
Wow.
But I had copied the copy of the law and had it posted.
Is it still that way?
As far as I know, it hasn't been repealed because I keep up with that pretty well.
Now, they have to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Is that what it is?
They have to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Stand for.
Well, no. Let me correct that. It doesn't say the students must stand. It says the Pledge of Allegiance must be said at the beginning of each school day. It doesn't direct students to do it, but it must be there. But if they were in my class, they were going
to
stand.
So who has to do it then?
The teachers have to enforce it, or you have to teach the students the reason why they do it. You've got to make them feel that honor and that care for those people who shed blood so that we could have it.
Now, this all happened with you in, 2005?
I did it in 2005.
What about now? What's happening? What's happening now? Do they do anything now?
As far as I know, they're still saying it. I retired in 2017. Uh-huh. However, they had asked me to record the Pledge of Allegiance for Robinson High School, and every morning they would say, "Would you stand?" And they would press the recording, and my voice would lead the kids I know for five more years. Well, I don't know for sure, but I think for five more years. I know that when I went back to visit, they would tell me, I hear you every morning on the leading the pledge on the announcements. And they said, we know your voice. But I was also the football announcer for Robinson for 17 years. Yeah. So everybody that went to Robinson had heard my voice for so long.
Now, her story's been told several times by Mike Huckabee at a couple of different events and along with the Republican National Convention.
Right.
And so, Randy, we've got a clip of that where he tells her story. Let's go to that and let's roll that, and then we'll go into a commercial and come back and have more conversation.
Okay. Sounds good.
I've got a good friend who's a teacher in Arkansas at the Joe T. Robinson High School. Her name is Martha Coffrin. And Martha, on the first day of class, 2005, almost exactly 2 years ago this week, having decided that a lot of her kids simply just didn't really appreciate their freedom, decided she'd try a little experiment on the first day of school. So what Martha did was she took all of the desk out of her classroom, every desk removed from her class, first day of school. Kids came in first period, empty class. They walked in, they looked around, they said, Ms. Coffrin, where are our desks? And she said, you don't get a desk until you can tell me how you earn one. And the kids said, well, I guess we have to make good grades. And she said, well, you need to make good grades, but that's not how you get a desk. And so some of them said, well, it's our behavior. We have to behave. Then you give us a desk. She says, well, you better behave in here, but that's not how you get a desk. Second period came. Nobody figured it out. They'd come in. They'd sit on the floor, stand against the wall. Third period, same thing. By lunch that day, all those kids had called their parents on their cell phones and said, Ms. Cothran's lost her mind. She's taken the desk out of the classroom. Everyone, we have four network-affiliated television stations in Little Rock. All four had camera crews out at Joe T. Robinson High School at noon that day to figure out what had happened to this teacher who had taken all the desks from the school and wouldn't let the kids have a place to sit. She held her ground until the last period. Last class, kids filed in. They looked around, no desk. Of course, buzz of the campus is, what's happened to Ms. Coffrin? She's gone crazy. Kids came in and sat on the floor, stood against the wall. And she said, all day I've been asking you to tell me how you get a desk. None of you figured it out. So she said, I guess I'm going to have to explain it to you. And with that, Martha Coffrin walked over to the door of her classroom. She opened the door. And when she did, in walked 27 veterans, every one of them coming in carrying a school desk. They placed those desks in rows. And when they had finished placing them and setting them up for the class, they stood over against the wall as if at attention. And as they did so, Martha was saying to the students, guys, you don't have to earn your desk after all, because these guys, they already did. Martha Coffrin told him that every day you come in here and sit in these desks, I want you to never forget that it may be free to you, but it wasn't to these guys and to some of their friends who didn't come back with them. And she went on to explain something I think every student ought to grow up in this country understanding, that we are so blessed to live in this great land. But our freedom wasn't free. It was costly. And it will be costly in the future. And the greatest challenge we have is to be like that generation before us, upon whose shoulders we have lived the good life we've enjoyed, and to realize that our responsibility is not only to protect it and to preserve it, but the greatest responsibility of all is to make sure that we pass it on to the next generation in as good a shape as we found it. Ladies and gentlemen, leadership in this country has got to do more than simply look at where we are. Leadership has got to look at where we're going and to make sure that the next generation coming up, that generation that's perhaps not even born yet, has a better America than the great one that we've inherited and the one for which we are incredibly responsible and had better be grateful to an almighty God for. Thank you, and God bless you. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you.
Bobby's Country Cooking. It's like Sunday after church at Grandma's, except it's Monday through Friday, 10:30 to 2. Homestyle cooking with generous portions, entrees, sides, and desserts to die for. Dine in or get it to go. We're in the West Chase Plaza at the corner of Shackelford and Markham. Bobby's Country Cooking.
Okay, folks, we're back, and I'm positive that you are enjoying this show tonight. You know, I told you that we had a superstar in our midst here.
Yeah.
You know, she has been Teacher of the Year, okay? And a lot of it had to do with this episode, I'll call it, and all. So would you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, definitely. The fact that, well, the VFW, every chapter or post, as we call it in the VFW, across the country, has a contest, if we want to call it that. Teachers are nominated as Teacher of the Year. And you go through grading or judging at the post level. Then they send it to the district level, then to the state level. Then the winners of each state are entered in the national level contest. And several times at VFW Post 9095 in Little Rock, I had been named the Post Teacher of the Year. But in 2006, I was named the Arkansas VFW Teacher of the Year. I didn't make it as the national level, but I do have to thank the American Legion, because at that point, I was named the American Legion National Teacher of the Year years afterward.
Okay.
About that.
Well, I was just getting ready to ask, what kind of a stunt do you have to pull to get the national award, okay?
I know it.
Now, at the break, we were having a little bit of a conversation, and you were talking about your dad. Tell us about that. I guarantee you our listeners want to hear that.
When I was growing up, of course, when you look at history taught in the 1950s and 1960s, the World War II veterans didn't like to talk much about what they had been through. But I always knew, when I was old enough to understand, that my dad had been a prisoner of a foreign war. He was the 24th American captured by the Germans. He was a waist gunner on a B-17, and those first B-17s did not have any windows in the aircraft. It was just an open airspace for it to come through, and the machine gun literally stuck out of the post or the window. And this was his very first bombing run. So as they take off, they head for Lille, France. And, of course, as they got close, they encountered the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, the fighters, who began shooting at our bombers. The first rounds of shells that came in, first one caught him in his right arm, right below the elbow, and the shrapnel literally went in, and part of it came out. When he died, he still had shrapnel left in that arm from World War II. Mm. The second round that came through, one of the pieces of shrapnel hit his right kneecap and shattered it, just like you'd take a hammer down on your kneecap and shatter it. Mm. The third burst of bullets that came through took off his oxygen mask.
Wow.
Of course, they looked like badminton cones back then. They just stuck out with a bigger nose thing. And they didn't carry spare oxygen mask. The bombing bay, the doors were open, but he had to step across that to get to the other side of the plane and somehow managed it even with the knee torn up. He got against the wall of the plane and slid down and passed out from a lack of oxygen. Mm. The ball turret gunner had not lowered the ball yet and realized there was no firing from the waist gunner position, so he popped the hatch open, climbed up, and found him there. He said, "I don't have a choice." He pushed the door open to the plane. Dad's parachutes was not fastened. He had the straps on, but it did not buckle. He pulled the ripcord, which they tell you cannot be done inside a plane, and shoved him out.
Wow.
The parachute opened. So you can pull the chute, and they can open. Now, I wouldn't advise doing that, but I wouldn't advise jumping out of a plane either. as he came to, he was unconscious, as he came to, the German pilots and the Luftwaffe actually waved their wings at him in salute. And, of course, he landed in a French farm field. He landed on that right leg. It turned 180 degrees to where his foot was actually facing backwards. Well, the pilots had, the German pilots had radioed to the German troops, and they came in a big two-ton flatbed truck. The French people had gotten a chair and put him in the chair. The Germans just picked up the chair, carried it off on the, put it up on the truck, and they carried him to the hospital.
Yeah.
And he was always so grateful for the hospital care he received.
Yeah.
He spoke well of the Germans. And of course, as we study history more and learn, and you look at the treatment given to POWs by various countries, I'm just so thankful he was captured in Germany. And in Japan, because the Japanese were far worse. He spent I think he spent about 15 months in the hospital, unable to walk. They finally had him where he had a crutch that he could use. And they moved him to two or three different camps, but he ended up in Stalag 17B. And there, he promoted athletics. The biggest thing in America is sports, pretty much, when you look at overall. And we needed something to build our morale. The Red Cross sent in parcels of basketballs, baseball gloves, baseballs, bats, everything, boxing mitts. And so he started a sports program there in the the POW camp, and got all of these sports going, and they had fantastic morale. He, in fact, he kept a war log, which was a book that the Red Cross had sent over to the prisoners, and he had documented all the different matches and the basketball games and the football games. So it really made a difference what he was able to do to help. And he had several friends who did make an escape from the camp, but they came back. They got recaptured. And then finally, in fact, he spent from October the 9th, 1942, to May the 8th of 1945 as a prisoner of war. And as on May the 8th, the Germans knew that the Russians were coming in to the camps. They blew up their guns and they ran. Daddy walked out to the camp gate and met a Russian tank commander or some kind of commander. Well, Daddy didn't speak any Russian and the Russian didn't speak any English, but they hugged each other and they shook hands and they clapped each other on the back. And the Russian pulled out an old gas can full of wine. And he took a big drink, and he handed it to Daddy, and Daddy took a big drink. And then he put it down, and they clapped each other on the back, hugged and nodded. And then he took another drink, handed it to Daddy, and he took a drink. We go through the third series. Well, they hadn't had any food in their camp for several weeks there. So by this time, the wine had hit Daddy, and he was feeling pretty lightheaded. And he said, no, no. Russian pulled his gun out. Daddy said, give me the can. So they finished sitting, having their drinks there. And then the Russians came in and liberated. And he was placed on a gurney to be taken in because his leg was bad by this time. And they put him back in the hospital, and he came home on a hospital ship.
How about that?
So because of his experiences that he really never told me much about until I became a history teacher. And my mother died when I was really young, and he would never talk about it before she died. Later, he began to talk more, and as I started asking questions, because I taught military history, he was willing to share. And I even went to a couple of reunions with him. So I'm so grateful for the fact that he survived that, and grateful for the fact that he served our country. And with me, there's a love for our country that will never go away because of what he instilled in me.
Sure.
You know, you tell that kind of a story, and it's very, very captivating. Did you ever have him, like, come to a class and, and speak?
He spoke when I was first at McClellan. He came and spoke there. Then he spoke at Robinson several times.
Okay.
I'm sure I had him coach. I also taught at Sylvan, and I was a basketball coach at McClellan and at Sylvan Hills also. And he came and talked at Sylvan Hills, I'm sure. And then I ended up moving to Robinson because I bought a house out close to Robinson. So at that point, I was a volunteer coach at Robinson, and I loved it. I got to coach in several games, and we won. Hmm. So that was the way to quit. I got to quit on a win.
Go out on top.
Huh? That's right.
I got a chuckle about the drinking at the gate story. That was some real peer pressure, right?
I think so.
Russian pulls a gun on me.
Oh, yes.
I'd be drinking.
Yeah, I'm drinking.
Whatever.
Definitely. But he was always, and he spoke well of the Russians that helped free them and then helped him get back to the hospital care. But he also spoke well of the Germans, and he did go back to visit the site of the camp in Germany around 2000. And the Germans there told him they wanted his trip to be better than anything he ever could have imagined in his life and to be as good now as it was bad when he was there before.
Wow.
So he truly was so thankful for everything.
What an awesome story. Mm-hmm. What an awesome story. Hey, here's what we'll do. Let's take a break, Randy.
Okay.
When we get back, you know, well, let me do this. For any of you families that are currently watching or listening to this, being Christmas Day, your family is probably around right now. So here's what I would suggest you do. Listen to this podcast, watch it on YouTube, and if your grandpa or your father or great-grandfather served in the war, why don't you get the family around and share a couple of stories that would really be good for your kids and grandkids to hear? Mm-hmm. Maybe, Papa, maybe you don't want to talk about it, kind of like Coach Cawthron said her dad wouldn't. I think it's time that you come out and say, hey, here's some stories that I can tell you. Because until we tell people the price that you and other men have paid for this country, I'm afraid that we're going to repeat history if we're not careful. And I think we probably are. You know, as you were telling this story, the thought occurred to me, John Wayne popped into my head.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Duke.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That was back, your story just alluded to when real men,
yes,
were men. They were real men.
Yes.
So if we can do anything on this Christmas Day, let us inspire you to get the kids around, share a few stories, and talk about what really happened and the price that was paid for this great country.
And don't forget Vietnam. Those veterans,
yeah,
still,
yes,
have not been properly,
right,
welcomed home.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Family, make it happen. We'll be right back.
When your event is catered by Bobby's Country Cooking, it's like coming home to eat. And Bobby's makes it easy. 224-9500 for the best homestyle catering available with desserts to die for. The food you love for your next gathering. Bobby's Country Cooking, Little Rock.
Okay, we're back. Now, we've had two segments here that's really nice and fluffy and real Christmassy, but I'm telling you, this wouldn't be Larry's rants, raves, and reviews without taking the gloves off a little bit, okay? So here's what we're going to do. In this last segment, folks, I want to talk to you about, Coach Cawthron, I want to know, are we really teaching our children in school, in history? What's your opinion on the health and the condition of our school systems? I want to hear from you.
I think you can tell from all of the shows on television where they stop people on the street and say, what is the capital of Arkansas? And they say, Texas, or something like that.
Okay.
Our geography is terrible. And I know they get random people, but we don't teach geography like it should be taught any longer. In fact, I don't think we teach history the way it is. And I understand when we were growing up, we had to memorize things because of the fact, otherwise we had to go to the encyclopedias,
right,
to look them up. Now, a kid can pick up a phone, ask Google what happened in the Spanish-American War, and they have an answer in,
that's
a
right,
second.
Uh-huh.
And the kids say, well, why should I learn it?
It's there.
It's there. I have it. Yeah. Why should I learn this stuff?
I got it on my phone.
Yeah. Why should I learn about history? Well, we don't know that we're going to have technology all of our lives. And you don't really learn something when you just look at it or hear Google spit it out. You hear it, but then your brain dismisses it. What makes you really learn something is the fact that you read it, you hear it, you study it over and over, and it is impressed upon your brain then. Mm-hmm. We don't teach kids things that they're really learning. They simply kind of tolerate them for as long as they've got to pass a test, which are mostly all online tests now.
Okay.
And I'm a little bit afraid that there's probably many instances of kids holding a cell phone and they have the test in front of them and they can go Google it and find answers. I don't know that that happens. It didn't happen when I was teaching, but technology's come a long way since mm-hmm. I retired. Mm-hmm. So I'm afraid of that. I think, and we're not teaching the values we need. We used to be very proud of what we'd learned and what we knew. And you could simply carry on a very good argument with someone or conversation mm-hmm. if you had the facts to back it up. But if you're going to sit here and convince me that the United States is prepared to take on the Middle East states in a war, you better have something to back it up with, because of the fact I know that our military is somewhat weakened right now because our recruitment levels are down mm-hmm. to a major point because we aren't training our people the same way. And we're accepting of anything that goes on. We used to have such high standards, and people were expected to behave in a certain way. You thought of others first and yourself second. Teamwork was very prevalent. And this is to go way off on another tangent, but look at our kids in college with the NIL. They're getting paid to play. They're not developing a loyalty to a program.
Yes.
The same thing happens in education.
Yes.
If you don't develop a loyalty to learning and understanding and knowing how to deal with things, you're not really learning a whole lot. You're just gathering some information to spit back.
And what's the old saying goes, it's something like, if we don't learn history, we're going to repeat it.
You're doomed to repeat it.
And, you know, and I got to tell you, I'm not the smartest person on history. I got to be honest with you, Randy. I don't know if we can have another guest that makes me feel kind of so stupid, you know, because and I say that in a very respectful way. I'm like, oh my God, I hope you don't ask me any questions, you know, because I'm going to flunk.
Just don't. As long as you don't ask me math questions, I won't ask you history questions.
You know, but it is true. You know, I've got to tell you that I'm terrified. I am terrified, particularly of public schools.
Now,
this is where you and I might disagree, and that's okay. I told you before you came on the show, if you want to call me stupid, feel free. Just jump in and have at it. I'm terrified of our public schools. They've gone woke. They've been dumbed down. They're liberals. They're communists that are running the things. They're uneducated educators that are out there that's teaching our children. I've got to be real honest with you. If I was a younger man and had my children younger today, you're probably looking at someone that's going to homeschool.
I've got a lot of friends. We have a lot of people in our church who homeschool because they don't trust the system anymore either. I would give anything if I could go back to teaching. I want so badly to go in that classroom and say, sit down and shut up and get ready to learn. Because I don't see that forcefulness coming out of our education today. In fact, I don't see it in our society. We are the adults. They are the kids. They are supposed to learn lessons they can use in life from the adults.
You don't see it in families.
Exactly. Mm.
How can we expect an educator to get in there and have that kind of authority when parents don't even know how to parent?
And you're exactly right. Our society is so concerned now with ourselves. We have so many divorced families, and there's only one parent with the child. Well, if it happens to be the father, he's going to have to work most likely to support the family, and the child is going into daycare or into latchkey kids, as many of us were growing up, because our parents might both have been working and you got sent home, but you knew to go straight home because the price you would pay otherwise you didn't want to pay. Mm-hmm. But as we look at this group of kids growing up, when they raise themselves, that's when the father or mother, both, either way, they want to think about their own lives. And they think, I'm only 25. I want to go out and have a good time. You kids go to bed and I'm going to leave and don't you dare get up.
Right.
But there's nobody to watch them there.
Right.
And they could burn the house down.
Yeah.
They could find guns that are left unprotected. And I'm all for guns. We have an arsenal at our house.
I don't own any. Government's listening. I don't own any. Go ahead.
We have an arsenal. We've got you covered.
Stop it, Randy.
So I would, you know,
are you counting gun safes or guns?
We don't have a safe, but they're out of reach of our cats.
Yeah,
so we're good.
There you go. There you go.
But,
you know, that's the thing. I was raised by a mama, by parents that there was one rule in the family. Now, this is back when kids got disciplined. This is back when they could spank your butt at school. And we had a rule that if you got a spanking at school, you got an automatically run
at
home.
Got it at home.
It was the Board of Education.
There you go.
It was.
That's where Mr. Howie called it. He was a shop teacher.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, you know, circling back, you made the comment of our armed forces. How many people are going into the armed forces because they're a problem child, a problem young adult, and, well, we're going to stick them in the armed forces and hope to God that they can fix them.
And they used to be able to.
Yeah.
But now the discipline is not as strict in our armed forces because we're looking at, we can't do that to them. We might hurt their little ego.
Political correctness.
Yes, that's the term I need.
That's the term.
Yes.
Political correctness is ruining every facet of the American life.
Yes, it is.
And you know what? A lot of people take a look at, well, I'll put little Billy Bob over in private school. Everybody thinks that if you send your kid to private school, they're going to have a wonderful education and everything's going to be great. No, the reason Billy Bob is in there is because he is about to get kicked out of public school. So the kids or the parents raked up enough money, shove them into public or to private school. And, you know, so you're facing it one way or the other. And I got to tell you, I grew up when my children were small and you had my children in your class.
Yes.
I grew up, I mean, I hated the idea of homeschooling. Oh, I could give you a full list of reasons why.
Oh, yeah.
And now, I got to be honest with you, I'm a big advocate of it because you can control what's going on. You know, during the scamdemic, the Pelosi plague, as I called it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there were two or three states that actually passed a law that a parent could not be in the room as long as a child was on virtual school.
Mm.
And I said, you got to be out of your ever-loving mind.
I didn't know that.
And the only reason that that happened is because they did not want to hear you as the parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? That it's responsible for that child. They didn't want you to hear that.
What they were teaching.
Exactly. Okay? So there's a lot of things that, and I'll bring this story up. This is something that how can I get into this? Okay. I can't tell you where, but it happened in central Arkansas.
Okay.
A child went to fifth grade.
Okay.
The teacher showed up in a political, if you will, T-shirt, okay? And I can't say what was on it because I was asked not to, okay? But they begin to discuss in this class different cultures. And the teacher began to talk about Native Americans.
Oh.
And said, well, you know, Native Americans believe in these dream catchers, okay? And she said, that's nothing more than a fairy tale. Well, for all of you that are listening to our show today, if you're Native American, I'm sure that you're offended. I can talk about different cultures without leading children down that path.
Exactly.
But then she went and stepped into it a little bit further, and she began to say, it's a fairy tale, kind of like the Bible.
Mm. Oh.
Now, folks, I'd like to tell you this is New York, that this is Chicago. This happened right here in Central Arkansas.
Oh, dear.
And I've begged the parents to come on my podcast and break this.
Oh, wow.
But they will not do it, so I'm...
I can understand why, because it's tough to be a kid of a parent who is politically active and speaks their mind.
Yeah.
The kids end up paying the price, which is wrong. The kids should be sheltered from all that. But the fact that...
Roll back and listen to episode one of our podcast from earlier this year. It's entitled, America's Voice Has Been Silenced. And it has been silenced.
Yeah.
So she went on to say, it's just like the Bible, Noah the Ark, that's just a fairy tale.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Then she said the Easter Bunny is a fairy tale. Then Santa Claus is a fairy tale.
Oh, broke their hearts.
I'm going to tell you, as a fifth grader, you're wanting to get up and say that kind of nonsense. And do you know what what they did to correct this problem?
What?
There's two fifth grade classes in this school system. They took the child and moved that child
to the other
class. And I said, you know, folks, all we did was kick the can down the road.
And didn't do a thing for the other kids.
No, that teacher is going to come back and do it to the other children. And it's like I was talking to my friend.
Oh, wow.
If your grandchild, my grandchild, was in that classroom, I would not appreciate the fact that you just stuck your head in the sand and moved on.
And it would be very important, and I understand the parents' position because of the kids.
Sure.
Because the kids do end up paying the penalty because other parents talk about it, their kids hear them, and then they put the original kids underground. But that story needs to be told because of the fact that that should never happen in our country.
I honestly think I scared them out of being on our show because through text, which I hate text because it loses and divorces all emotions.
Yes.
Right.
The same way with email.
Yes.
Okay. I alluded to the fact of we'll do the podcast. We'll get some of our friends at like Channel 4 that Randy and I know.
Right.
We'll see if we can't get that out there. We'll contact the Arkansas Attorney General's office, and then we'll try to go and see if Sarah Sanders Huckabee won't pick up on this story, and let's see what we can do to help our school systems out. Now, when I kind of got on that kind of an idea, they started sending texts back saying, hey, it's all taken care of. It's all good. Okay. So I guess I would tell you that parents, you've got some responsibility.
Yes.
And teachers, you've got responsibilities. Okay. Now, let me put you on the spot.
Okay.
Okay. I don't mean to be in an ugly fashion in any way, shape, or form, with all respect. Why don't good retired educators like yourself run for school board?
I actually considered it this year. However, but I didn't find the announcement that where the position was going to be open in time. Mm. But I would consider it.
We need you.
I would love to do it, but I just didn't find the information in time. Also, I work at the polling place, and I'm not sure they'll let me work at a polling place if I'm on the ballot.
Okay.
So that would be, because I love working in the polling place.
Well.
That is a chance
to. My mama did, and she loved it. She made a lot of friends, knew everybody in town.
Larry, that's what I heard some other cities are doing, is people that are fed up with this.
Yeah.
They can't run for governor. They can't run for attorney general, whatever. They're not known. But, hey, I can run for school board. We can start with the schools. We can start with the kids. And that's what they're doing.
That's what we have to do.
The school board.
And Randy, the other day, you know, I thought driving down the road, you know, we get on this show and we rant, we rave about all
Let's
kinds
run
of stuff.
For it.
But hey,
I'll be on it.
My wife, okay, look at my wife over my shoulder.
Yeah,
back there.
I see her back
She's
there.
In the audience.
I see her back here.
Oh, Gish would love for me to run. My husband is the best supporter in the world.
Why don't we start by having the good educators start running for school boards. Right. Why don't we have good retired businessmen and women that could be city councilmen, that could be mayors,
yes,
that could be these types of, hold these types of offices, and stop belly aching and griping so much about this kind of stuff,
yes,
and jump in and do something right about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to be involved. In fact, I actually have considered running for representative or senator. And I thought, of course, I'm 72. And at my age, I don't know that I'd last through all of that. I'd be arrested because somebody would say something. I'd probably deck them.
Have you taken a look at, have you taken a look at some of our, okay, you know, Biden, Pelosi, Ginsburg, I mean, you know.
Well, I'd make good sense.
If you can fog a mirror, they'll let you in office, okay? Oh,
I've got good sense. It's just the fact that I don't know that I could hold my anger back if people kept doing as many stupid things as I've seen lately.
Maybe it's time that we stop holding our anger back. So here's what I'll tell you, folks. I don't know when I've enjoyed a show any more than this, and doing it on Christmas Day has been extra special for me. And folks, I'm going to plead with you one more time. Get the family in the room. Talk to them about some history. Talk to them about what your family has gone through and what other people have done to pay the price. And have some good family time. Get off the screen. Shut off the TVs.
Yes.
Mute the iPhones. Lock them in a drawer if you have to. Set those kids down and do something that's really educational and entertaining for your kids.
And what greater gift could you give your war veteran than the fact to know that his or her family cares and wants to support him?
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And tomorrow